Hey, this is Chris Marrick from Marrick Media, PR manager of the Mighty Progfest, and you are listening to the 9-8 podcast.
Back, everybody, to the 9-8 podcast, the home of progressive and underground music right here in Australia. My name is Alex Hogg, and joining me is Dave Ellis. Hello, Dave.
G'day, g'day. How are you?
I'm good.
And this is a bit weird, actually, because this is the first time that we've actually ever been able to eyeball each other while we're, you know, doing this recording. Because at the moment, we're sitting in my studio in Sydney. And Alex is actually sitting right next to me. He's waving. No, he's not. He is now giving me the bird.
had to be done.
Had to be done. Absolutely. Because we've just finished yesterday. I shouldn't say just finished. That implies we were recording this at like 1 o'clock in the morning or something. We're not.
Yeah, no.
It is the day after Progfest. This is the Progfest wrap-up episode where we're going to be talking about everything that happened sort of on the day and the things we liked, the things we didn't like, and who we actually got to chat with, and, you know, just the general wrap-up of what was, in my opinion, an absolutely fucking phenomenal day.
I can second that. I mean, this one was my first Progfest, obviously being West Coast. They don't come out our way that often. Or at all, actually. So I really enjoyed this festival. And this one, I mean, I've been to other prog festivals in, you know, Europe and whatnot. And this one is definitely on par with those in terms of the vibe and the lineup that we had. It was definitely really, really, really good. But before we jump into that, we've got a little bit of follow-up, and this comes from John Young of Life Signs. He was wondering about people who were, illegally uploading his own music to YouTube, and it turns out that we discussed this on episode 4, I think. We talked a little bit about freebooting.
Yes.
So it turns out that YouTube now have a system where if you register your music with, I think, something called CD Baby, I think is what it's called.
Yep.
Then YouTube recognizes that it's your music and the person uploading it is not you, and they will take the ad revenue off them and give it straight back to you. So you can collect those sweet, sweet pennies.
Which is really, really good. But there was a story recently with, I think it was Paul Davis, who's a guitarist on YouTube. He does a lot of instructional videos and so on and so forth. And this guy, this hip-hop producer or producer or something, actually ripped off one of his tracks, and didn't only rip it off, he just straight recorded it from the service. Well, I don't think it was YouTube, but whatever it was. And he recorded it straight off that, sampled it, and used it as the backing to this particular song. So when a couple of weeks later, or months later, or years later, or whatever it was, Paul noticed that one of his tracks on YouTube was actually copyright violation, despite it being his own track. So he ended up getting in contact with the guy and basically going, dude, the fuck.
what the hell?
The guy sort of was a bit apologetic about it and things like that. But, you know, it really goes to show as well, because Paul in this email, we'll see if we can find the link on YouTube and you can watch the whole video. But he actually mentioned on there, he said, you know, if you hadn't gotten in contact with me, I would have said, yeah, man, go for it. But just make sure that, you know, I'm recognized as the original content creator. But this just leaves a bit of taste in people's mouths. So long as it's getting the right person, is my point, then it's a good idea.
This is the problem with YouTube inherently, and especially content creators on YouTube, is that they've been ripped off and taken advantage of and screwed around so many times by nefarious folk who want to try and bootstrap their own YouTube channel by ripping off everybody else, that they get rather cynical. And so when they see someone who may well be a fan who just wants to upload a song, you know, for their own sort of amusement, that gets flagged, and, you know, people get really angry about it when they're not meaning anything malicious by it, and they're certainly not trying to, but because they've been stung so many times, you know. people's, you know, sort of once bitten, twice shy almost.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was something yesterday as well I overheard about the band that we saw there, Anubis, who we will be talking about this episode, uploading it back in the day of torrenting and so on and so forth, because that's music torrenting pretty well dead now thanks to Spotify, etc.
Amen to that.
Amen. Well, yes and no. I mean, you know as well as I do that in this country it served quite a good purpose, being that, you know, we just get everything, pay everything through the arse here. And we tend to get everything late as
those,
well. Those
of you around here who actually watch Game of Thrones will definitely know what we're talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, Game of Thrones, and even recently, actually, sorry, side note, getting sidetracked, because that's totally not something that happens on this podcast.
No, not at all.
The Netflix exclusive show, The Good Place, my girlfriend and I watch it religiously. We watch it religiously because it's kind of about heaven and hell.
Hey-o.
But the last three episodes of season three have been released in the US, but they haven't been released here yet.
Mm.
Well, two of them have. We're still waiting on one. But you look at it and go, but that's the whole point of Netflix.
Yeah, if it's one platform, one model, it shouldn't matter for beans when stuff gets released to wherever.
Exactly.
You know.
Which was the great thing about, I remember back in the day, a mate of mine used to watch Castle, and he used to torrent it for me. He used to download it. Because you could literally download it 3 or 4 hours after it aired in the US, and we'd have to wait like 6 weeks.
Yep, I did the same thing with House.
Yep. It's just, anyway, sorry, we digressed. But I believe Anubis actually used torrent sites to their advantage. And you were telling me that Marillion did the same thing way back when.
Yes, one probably inspired the other, I think. So back in 2008, Marillion decided to release Happiness is the Road to the torrent sites on their own. And the way that they did it was that if you found the torrent, downloaded the files, you tried to play anything, it would play a little video that described what they were doing. It was like, you know, we don't condone torrenting, but what we're trying to do is sort of make the best of a bad situation. And they presented the punters with two options. You can either pay for it with, you know, pay what you want, because that was the thing that was back in the day. We're talking the time of around Radiohead when they did that. Or you can have the album for nothing, a low quality version of the album for nothing, I might add, in exchange for your email address. Presumably then you went on their mailing list and it was like, hey, we're playing a gig in wherever. And if you happen to be in that wherever, why don't you come along?
I'd imagine so. Mind you, this is back, if this was back when Radiohead did that thing.
No, it was 2007.
Yeah. Must have been early 2007. Because I remember we were still in the Bankstown area. It was before we moved, and I remember getting it. It took me ages to download, thanks to Australian internet.
And thanks to dial-up internet, I assume.
No, it was ADSL then, but, you know.
A really shitty ADSL.
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. Theoretical max speeds that mean fuck all.
Boy, where have I heard that?
welcome to NBN Co, where the numbers are made up and the internet speeds don't matter. But the whole thing back then, I mean, low quality would have been 128 kbps, which is what Apple were recommending to listen to on their iPod anyway.
Yep.
So you could take full advantage of that 20 gig of storage, which was big for the time. I shouldn't mock it. You know?
iTunes used to sell their stuff at 256.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been 192. 192, then they went to 256. Now I'm pretty sure it's 320.
Yeah, 320 VBR generally is what most people use. Because the discernible...
And rightly so.
Well, yeah, the discernible quality loss isn't enough to warrant worrying about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you lose a little bit right on the top, but it's not worth actually sitting there and going and having a file size that's... Well, as you did the other day, he actually had a... he's got a new little toy, a little stick recorder, which is a later model than the one that I've got. Same product, but the newer generation. Less power consumption and better microphones. And you know how it works. Anyway, he had this file, and it was like in WAV, it was like 780 meg or something. So he looked at it before he flew over and went, nah, fuck it, I'll just bring it over. I'm not going to bother uploading that. But then we converted it to MP3 and it was like 40 meg or something. So the compression algorithms these days are fucking fantastic.
Yep.
And I doubt, it's going to sound horrible, but I doubt anyone listening would have gone, oh, that's not in Wave, or, you know.
Well, the problem is, of course, just to pull back the curtain slightly, we can't even upload a file that big to as a podcast.
That's true, yeah. Max is, what, 100 meg or something? Which is fine. I mean, it sort of limits the show size as well, which is quite good.
Yeah. I mean, people listening to I mean, unless you're doing an ASMR podcast, which do exist, by the way, then that's probably the only reason you need the file size. Anyway, we have completely digressed because we still haven't even got to what Anubis done.
The digression podcast.
Yes. So what Anubis had done is that they had put out their debut album on a torrent. I'd love to get these guys on the show one day, and they have a new album in the pipeline, so they're currently working on that. So when that comes out, we'll definitely, definitely try and get them on the show, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit more about Anubis later on when we're talking about, you know, the stuff we were impressed by. That should probably give you enough of an idea as to what we're going to be talking about with them. But overall, yesterday, the crowds were actually really, really, really good. I ran into quite a few people I knew. The boys from Genetics were there. The boys from James Norbert Ivani were there, obviously, because they were playing.
Otto from Sleep Makes Waves was around as well. I mean, they toured with Sky Harbor and Monuments for a while, so he knows those guys pretty well. Had a chance to catch up with him at the end of the night, which was good. A
couple of the members of the Butterfly Effect were there as well. So it was really prog rock royalty. Not so much as the one in Perth, which you went to, Hoggy, though.
Yeah, there were quite a few people from there. The two brothers from Tangled Thoughts of Leaving were there.
Which was not, by the way, Progfest. That was just the Ocean show,
wasn't
it? Was
a Progfest sideshow, I think, was the official tag for that one. But, yeah, the two guys from Tangled Thoughts of Leaving were there, the two brothers, Ron and Luke. Someone told me that one of the guys from Carnival was running around as well. I didn't actually get to see him, but that's the nature of the thing. That was a pretty full show as well. They probably would have had maybe 600 or 700 people at that show.
Yeah, right.
Badlands was pretty full. So that was.
But yeah, I mean, that's sort of the vibe of the prog community, though. And it's funny, this is the second year I've been to Progfest now, and kind of blows me away considering, how royally fucked the music scene is in Sydney. And you kind of got a little bit of a taste of that on Saturday night, which was really interesting because Hoggy flew in on Saturday, obviously, for Progfest on Sunday. We all went out on Saturday night, went to a local brewery and got a tour and everything like that. There's actually a very funny photo that I should post up for everyone to see of us on top of the barrel and so on.
Well, you were on top of the barrel.
You were on top of the barrel.
Nobody else was game enough to climb up there with you.
But no, it was cool. The Wayward Brewing guys were kind enough to show us around despite it being like 10 o'clock at night and so on. It was actually a really, really good evening. And then we went to a punk gig, which did absolutely nothing, I think, to reinforce the whole fact that Sydney's nightlife is dead, because this thing was fucking packed.
Yeah, really, really small. What was it, the Valve Bar? So it's like downstairs from the Agincourt Hotel. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there probably would have been maybe 100, 150 people there.
It was pretty packed.
Yeah.
But it was a punk gig, which is the bass player of my band plays in this other band as well, and that's why we went, just to support him.
I think the other thing is as well, we got there sort of relatively late, so there may have been, what, 4 or 5 or 6 bands on the bill or something, and we probably saw the last 3.
But lots of fun.
Yeah.
As
the guitarist from your mate's band said, punk is not a spectator sport. You've got to get up there and sort of get in amongst it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing I would say as well, which is interesting, that I've seen this at many gigs and I've played both parts, is that there's two parts to a circle pit. There is the people in the circle and the people who make up the circle. And, you know, try and keep, you know, you see the circle forms and then everybody who doesn't want any part of it will sort of get out to the edges a bit. And then I'll sort of jump in the middle and play the edge of the circle. And no, you shove off back over that way.
Yeah.
You go bounce around over that way. Don't start bouncing around over here. Yeah. And all these other people who don't want to be a part of it.
Well, that happened on the day at Progfest for
Chaos Divine.
It was Chaos Divine, yeah.
Yeah. I had a quick chat to David after after one of the sets. It wasn't his set. It was one later on in the night. And I said to him, I said, I don't think I've ever seen slam dancing to Africa before. And if that doesn't get him the opening slot for when Toto tour Australia, then there is something seriously, seriously wrong with the music scene here.
Mate, that was, I've got to admit, that was incredible. Seeing the guy from Castlevania, those of you who are following us on Twitter yesterday, we were tweeting about the bands and so on and so forth, just did sort of a short thing on the bands and so on. And I believe that the tweet that I wrote up for that was something like, and as I'm writing this, the lead singer has just gone from that sweet, you know, prog, mid-high range singing to this guttural scream, this growl that came out of him. And I was standing next to my girlfriend and just sort of stared at the stage in awe and wonder as to how the fuck that comes out of the same guy.
Mm-hmm. This is what I've been saying.
Obviously, the answer is practice, but, you know, I mean, fuck me.
Oh, yeah, he's very, very good. And he's, you know, very, very wide range of different styles and stuff. And, yeah, they've been covering Africa for years. Mm. I've probably seen them cover Africa on stage probably half a dozen times.
Yeah, right, okay.
In various performances.
But on the idea of the crowd being awesome, the pits and so on and so forth, the circle pits and such that opened up for pretty well everything after Chaos Divine, because that's when it sort of got heavy and genty in the main room anyway, which is the Factory Theatre here in Sydney.
Yeah, there weren't too many people dancing around downstairs doing too much circle work down in the Faro stage downstairs. A little bit too small for that sort of thing.
But I did want to give a shout out to the people who saw people fall over and pick them up. Because as we have bellowed about on this episode numerous times about shitty etiquette and band and gig etiquette and so on and so forth, the community there actually seemed really, really good. And I was a little worried about it, to be honest, because I saw a couple of people who were quite young around, a couple of girls that were, I would have guessed, probably about 15, 16.
I thought this was an 18 over gig.
Yeah, but generally you can get in if you've got a guardian with you.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, I think they had their mum with them.
To be fair, though, there was a pretty wide mix of people in the crowd. There would have been people there who were, you know, like you said, you know, 17, 18 or whatever, all the way through to guys who were, you know, quite a bit older than us, probably, you know, in their 40s and their 50s and stuff.
Yep, absolutely.
And, you know, everybody sort of, you know, pretty open and receptive, I think, to all of the bands. I mean, even though there were loads of people who were just sort of checking out the band, you know, I've not heard these guys before. Let's, you know, duck in and have a look and be really interested and excited by, you know, different bands that they may not necessarily have heard. Like, for example, I rather enjoyed Lowe's performance. Now, those of you who've listened to this show long enough to know our own musical biases know that neither of us are particularly particularly big fans of the sort of sort of music.
Cookie Monster vocals,
yes. We're not one much for that. So it's fun to see live, and it can be really fun to see live. It's not necessarily something that I spend a lot of time sitting down listening to at home. But I thought that their performance was rather good, and I particularly liked the way that the vocals sat on top of the music. It's really easy. Well, it seems to be really easy for all that stuff to get sort of lost in the mess, and you don't get too much definition on that.
Yeah,
especially in the smaller rooms and smaller gigs. But I thought that was quite impressed by that. Yeah. I thought they were really good.
I've got to admit, I wasn't a big fan of Low, but that's just me. There was another band there. I think it was it Red Bee, I think? They were the guys from the Blue Mountains.
I completely missed their set, unfortunately. I was.
I can't remember who it was, but it was, I mean, it was basically Southern hick metal.
Interesting.
You know, which is fine. It serves its purpose. But, you know, there were a couple of bands there on the day, actually, I thought that were a little bit out of place. And I thought that there were a couple of bands who probably shouldn't have had the set times they did. They probably should have swapped up with a couple other bands.
Yeah.
But that might have been a logistical thing.
I also suspect it was probably let's stack some of these maybe slightly smaller audience bands in various places for people to go and have dinner, just take a break. Because the other thing is as well, I mean, at least for us, we had, at the end of the night, five bands in a row that we wanted to see.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was an alternating stages.
Yeah,
and so one of the stages was running late.
Which is always, well, this always happens at festivals where you've got big, we've got sort of international bands that have a lot of stuff and maybe they're rather particular about the sound, especially when they're using in-ear monitors. Because at least from what I have heard, those things are a tricky bastard to get right, even on a good day.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. But I did also want to just say very quick, hello and thanks to all the people who came up and spoke to us. We did have a few people actually who came up and said, hey, you're this guy and you're that guy and da da da. And actually, funny story, two of the people that I ran into yesterday, I was on a panel for Sunrise with talking about pill testing. And for those of you who were able and managed to see our bonus episode on pill testing, i.e. people that were at the festival because no one else has the link. And funnily enough, two of the people that were on the pill testing panel with me on Sunrise were there. So it was really interesting to run into them. And then the girl, whose name's Sophie, she goes, it's funny seeing you here. I mean, I said, well, and I was talking about prog music and metal music and all that sort of stuff on it, and everyone else was kind of talking about EDM on this panel. And then she goes,
and you really were the sausage and the souffle on that panel, weren't you?
Absolutely. And
the
she goes,
prog guy who doesn't take drugs on a panel about pill testing.
In support of it. but then she goes, oh, so she said, I thought I recognized you. So she pointed at you and goes, so is that Simo? And I've gone, no, that's Hoggy. And she goes, right, where's Simo? But really interesting, I think, that he's that we were recognised with that. And we did have, there's one gentleman that came up and tried to convince us that our Astonishing review was wrong.
I'm surprised it took only one person, really. I thought we were going to get a whole bunch of people.
Yeah. And a few others as well who came up and made themselves known and said thanks for doing the podcast and thanks for running the fan club and all that sort of stuff, which was really nice. So
thank you to all those people as well. I'll just jump in here and say, you know, thanks very much to all the nice comments that we had from people who, you know, when we were handing out cards, like, oh, yeah, I'll listen to your show or yeah, you know, so it's really nice to know that, you know, at least someone's listening.
Yeah, well, it was actually really good as well to have some people go, oh, actually, yeah, I listened to this.
Yeah,
you know, oh, you're the guys, you know, and that was actually really, really cool. That was actually happening. So thank you for all that, and thanks for everyone in the crowd for being very well behaved on the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I didn't see anyone throw anyone out. I think the time that the security guard got the most active, the guys at the front in the photography pit, was when the lead singer from The Ocean decided to do a stage dive and jump over the barrier and into the
and then stood pit. And then literally stood on top of the crowd, like sort of stood kneeled on top of the crowd.
And
great visual, but I'm sure the security guys collectively shat themselves when they saw it happen.
Oh, more than likely, yeah. Especially the big guy that was there. He was,
I was a bit further back, so I saw a little bit of it, but I think they were more worried about the cord getting wrapped around something and
of the poor photographers or something.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know it was going to happen.
No, I'm sure they didn't either.
Yeah, well, we're not really let in on any of that sort of stuff. On that note as well, I did want to just make one little dodgy complaint here as one of the photographers on the evening. Which you can never get our way with, can we? We can't always have to complain about something. The lighting.
Oh, yeah, the lot
the
of red light.
For the most part was fucking horrendous.
It was mostly red, wasn't it?
Oh, fuck, man. Especially down in the Pharaoh stage, which is a smaller stage. They were running two stages as they did last year, one downstairs and one upstairs. But the one downstairs was most, I'm pretty sure that the fucking lighting guy was AFK for most of it. Like, seriously, I'm sitting there going, what the fuck? Like, how am I supposed to shoot? Right, black and white it is.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the reality of it. And then upstairs, for the last couple of bands, particularly The Ocean, it was all backlit. The entire thing was just strobes, blue lights, red lights, and fog machines. And it's like, well, okay, that's great. But fuck me if we're going to get a half-decent fucking shot out of this.
That's exactly what A Perfect Circle did, by the way. They had all the platform at Big Prog, my friend. They had all the platforms, and the platforms had these great big whacking strobes on it, and they were just firing white light straight out from the stage, which gave the, you know, the great benefit of having Maynard completely in shadow for the whole bloody gig, but also, I assume, made the photographer's job absolute sort of death on wheels trying to get any sort of decent shot out of it. Because at least Maynard was in silhouette. The two guys out the front weren't so bad, but Maynard was essentially in silhouette for the whole bloody night.
Yeah. But beyond that, I mean, it was actually reasonably well run. I heard they had a bit of an issue with the back line at the beginning of the gig, but that got sorted out pretty quickly, and the smaller stage was running on time. The bigger one was about 15 minutes late or something like that for the whole gig, which didn't really matter until the end of the night when it's like getting on 12 o'clock and you're just like, I just want to go home.
I'm pretty sure the last, well, at least Toe Hider did and the Ocean did as well, as far as I can work out. Have a slightly cheeky longer set.
Yeah, I know Toe Hider did.
Yes.
And which was awesome.
Yeah, I was going to say it. By the way, wasn't I right?
Oh, dude.
It's one thing to be able to pull that. It's one thing to be able to pull that off in the studio and do all the high stuff in the studio. But as far as I can work out, he essentially sang it pretty much exactly the same on stage as well.
Yeah. I mean, how those notes come out of that guy, I don't know.
He does do a death. He does have some low stuff as well. I mean, yeah, you know, whatever makes you feel superior. There's and he goes right down on in the chorus before he jumps into the solo.
And
I said to you after the set, I think it's a fucking disgrace for this music scene that he's not playing stadiums.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that guy is, to say he is obscenely talented sells him short.
Absolutely.
That is honestly, for me, one of the most impressive acts of the night, of the whole day, was Toe Hider. That was obscene. So much fun. Reminded me of Bill Bailey.
Yeah, there's a lot. This is why when I interviewed him, which you will hear on the previous episode of the 9-8 podcast, where I had a little interview with Mike Mills in Perth, in a men's room as well, I might add, which gleefully pointed out on Facebook for everybody. Great acoustics in there, though, by the way. I'll probably use that again sometime if I do another interview or nip out the back into the men's room.
Be careful, mate. Just be careful how you say that, yeah?
Yes, yes, yes. That's why I let him make the joke and not me, because he can make those jokes at professional expense, not me. What was I going to say now? Yes, so when... that's why I wanted to ask him about the comedic elements of his band, because, you know, he's making all the, you know, all the rock faces and sort of pretending like his right hand, because he's a left-handed guitarist, is sort of playing the notes on its own without his input at all, which it probably does feel like that if you're that good in the guitar, where you sort of just go for it and muscle memory does whatever it does.
Yeah.
He is a phenomenal front man.
Oh.
An amazing vocalist and a killer guitar player. And I'll say it again, it is a damn shame that he is not playing arenas.
Agreed.
Because he should be up there with Carnival and all the other big, you know, Carnival, Tame Impala, all the big sort of big names that made it big elsewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, there were a couple of really impressive kind of left of field bands on the night. One of them was Snuff. Now, I don't know, did you get in to see Snuff? Or
no, I didn't.
You didn't?
No, I was actually doing the interview with Hashash and while they were on the stage. So that's in the pipeline. You'll hear that episode in the coming days.
We have quite a few interviews from the day that we're going to sort of release as little tidbit episodes sort of in between, so you guys can get your 9-8 podcast fix on the off weeks when we're not actually doing that stuff. So just so you guys are aware as to what's coming in the next couple of weeks.
Yes. We have some very, very big shows coming up. So
absolutely. Snuff were left of field as hell. Basically a female-fronted Nine Inch Nails. It was impressive. Very, very impressive. I actually ran into a friend of mine by the name of Darryl Moylan, who is at nearly every gig that I have been to. I run into him all the fucking time. And I've known him for years. He used to be a customer of mine when I used to work in a music shop down south in the south of Sydney. And if you're listening, by the way, Darryl, hello.
Hello.
But he said, mate, you got to go out and check these guys downstairs, Snuff. Like, you know, incredible, incredible, incredible. I was like, okay, I'll go down and give him a crack. We did try to get to every band, and I think I did actually get to see every band.
You were shooting most of them, so you would have seen true. You would have seen most of everything. There were. I think I missed one. Yeah, I think I missed maybe three or four. I think. Some of them due to interviews and some of them because, you know, a man's got to eat.
Yeah, exactly. But these guys are really cool. It was just a vocalist, a guy on decks. I think in the interview that I had with the lead singer from that band, I think I called them the Decky Decks because he basically had a machine set up and like a Native Instruments machine or whoever it is that makes that and a laptop and then a live drum set as well. And it was really cool stuff. Also, their business card, probably one of the coolest things I've ever seen. So it's just a little square, little laminated piece of paper, basically. And on the front, it's got, you know, Snuff and the band logo and all that sort of stuff. And they ham up that whole sort of semi-satanic sort of worshipping, devil worship kind of stuff on it. And then on the back, it had at the top all of their contact information and underneath the title Summon. And then underneath that, there was Stalk, and it was all their social media accounts. I thought it was really, really clever, actually.
Do you have one of those business cards? We should try and put one in the show notes.
Yeah, I've got it in my bag.
Terrific. We'll put that in the show notes so everyone can have a look at that.
It was very cool. So there was them. Obviously, Anubis, who we've spoken about briefly. Now,
yes.
These guys, Australian Pink Floyd.
Yeah, there's definitely a Pink Floyd element, and as I said to you on the day, as there is no arguing with a Stratocaster guitar solo.
No,
there is no arguing with that at all. Mm. I would say that these guys have definitely got the vintage prog sounds. You've got the Hammond organ, you've got the Mellotron, you've got Moog, you've got all that vintage sound, and obviously the vintage guitar sound as well with the Stratocaster. But then you've also got this mixed in this newer sort of almost like a neo prog kind of sound. A lot of Radiohead, a lot of that sort of music. Mm. A lot of Marillion as well, actually, and the not old school Marillion, which is sort of that. Sort of got that sort of Genesis-y vibe to it. Definitely the new generation of it.
Yeah,
new school, new style Marillion. Unsurprisingly, considering, you know, there's half the good portion of the band are big Marillion fans. Yeah. So I spent quite a bit of time chatting with them about all things Marillion. I mean, you sort of dropped past two or three times and you were like, oh, you guys still talking about Marillion?
That was funny, actually, because we were just yakking away and then I'd walk over to do another interview and walk past and, what are you up to? Talking about Marillion? Right, cool, leave you to.
Yeah. So these guys, I mean, the other interesting thing, the little tidbit that I was going to say is that this is another band that I find is slightly infuriating that they're not really, really big here. They told me that they do 80% of their album sales overseas.
Well, they just got back from a tour in Europe. Yes. I was speaking to the bass player from the band, and he was saying that they just got back from a tour in Europe. And the place, he said that didn't matter where we played, it was packed.
Yep.
Even pissing down rain, 10 o'clock on a fucking Sunday night, the place was packed. And then they said, when we had our first gig here in Sydney, and we had like 15 people rock up because it started raining.
Oh, for crying out loud.
People were messaging them going, oh, sorry, I'm not going to be able to make it, you know, because it's raining.
I've seen gigs where there's been heavy snowfall and that people will still turn up.
Yep.
And mainly because the band, if there is heavy snowfall, I know this happened to Fish when he was playing at, I think it's the Leamington Spa. There was a heavy snowfall and he said, the gig is going ahead regardless. We're not cancelling. You know, come on down.
Yeah.
Because the promoter won't cancel the show. Because it wasn't, if he cancelled the show, then he was on the hook for all the money.
That's right.
But the promoter said that, well, we're not cancelling it. We're playing. So people still turned up. I think they still had a good portion of the people turning up. So I think some people were like genuinely snowed in and they couldn't make it. I mean, you know, and that's what it would take for people in, you know, you are genuinely snowed in, you can't get out because you're, I don't know, your driveway's covered in 2 foot of snow, then you probably have an excuse to not turn up. But if it's just raining, it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
I know. Like, really? Are you that precious?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. But no, I'm surprised that Anubis aren't bigger than they are because they certainly were
certainly
amazing.
Big in Europe to use that, Certainly big in Europe, to use that old cliche.
Yeah, or bigger in Japan.
Yeah.
But no, that's just incredible. Afterwards, I spoke to the guy, the lead guitar. Well, they sort of had two lead guitarists, but the main one, the guy with the Strat. And I said, dude, you're a Gilmore fan? He says, yeah, a little bit. You know, he's sitting there, he's wearing a The Wall shirt, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And you can't, as you said, I think, Hoggy, you know, if you're playing that style of music with a Strat, you kind of can't help but sound like Gilmore.
Exactly.
Because it's so quintessential, you know.
Yeah,
but amazing.
Exactly.
Absolutely, absolutely incredible band. And Toe Hider.
Mm-hmm.
We've spoken at length, but fuck me. Yeah. Man, blew me away. Also, the band that opened the day, Numidia.
Numidia, yeah. They were really, really good. Oh,
really
fantastic.
Cool.
Enjoyed their... They're playing another show sometime shortly in Sydney.
Yeah, they have their launch show for their new album. I think it was on the 16th of February.
So if you are in Sydney, get some tickets for that one because they really impressed me. I really, really enjoyed their set.
Yeah.
So get on down to that show if you're in Sydney.
Mm, absolutely.
And if you're not in Sydney, we'll put some links in the show notes. You can buy the record when it comes out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Support the local music scene.
Absolutely.
Best we humanly can.
Speaking of new records coming out, Anubis told me that they have a new album that is in the pipeline that they're working on. So when that one comes out, we will definitely be having a bit more of an in-depth look into that one. The other band, I mentioned earlier that we bumped into Otto from Sleep Makes Waves. They too have a new album that is in the pipeline, so which hopefully will be out sometime this year. So there's another couple of big records that I'm certainly looking forward to this year.
I mean, Sleep Makes Waves are incredible. They're an absolute royalty around these parts.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But, you know, amazing to see quite a few of the people there as well yesterday, and quite a few of the people who are running around, you know, behind the scenes. There were a few people we were getting sneaky glimpses of people in the background.
Well, Sleep Makes Waves have toured with Sky Harbor and Monument, so, you know, they're all pretty close friends, I imagine. So they're coming, you know, they go, hey, we're coming to Sydney, you know, want to catch up, and then they'll sort of catch up and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. Contentious topic, because we are so unfamiliar to be talking about that.
A contentious topic on this show? What do you mean? What on earth could you possibly be talking about?
What do you think of the ocean?
Oh, I was hoping you weren't going to ask me this. I think the problem... And I felt the same way about Sky Harbor and Monuments as well, is that I think the problem, at least for me anyway, because they were following on from like really, really good local live acts, Low, Opus of a Machine and Toe Hider respectively, if they were playing on the same stage, because obviously they were downstairs and those guys were upstairs, if they were playing on the same stage, I would have said that all three of those probably would have blown the main act off the stage.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. I wasn't super impressed with the ocean. They sort of sounded a bit flat.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, they're now on the back end of their Australian tour, so this would have been their fourth show in 4 days. So
economics of touring, which we've spoken
exactly.
At,
you know, when the overseas bands come here, they're usually playing 5 or 6 shows in 6 or 7 days, and and as a result, they just get. I'm assuming they're just probably tired. You know, I was chatting with some guys from Kripke's Illusion, who opened for Lepros last time Lepros were in town.
Yeah,
and they are big Lepros fans, and they wanted to have a chat with Lepros and talk music and stuff. But because the Perth show was the last show of that particular tour, they were absolutely exhausted, and they'd had some gear stolen and other things as well. So they were just, I think, tired and kind of, you know, waiting to get home, possibly, I guess. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, trying to put words in their mouth or try and paint them up as, you know, whatever. But, you know, when you're at the end of a tour like that, you know, 6 shows, 7 days, you're just exhausted and, you know, that maybe does reflect in the live performance potentially.
Oh, maybe. But I mean, by comparison to some of the other guys as well, I mean, the last three bands on that main stage were sort of that modern prog gent sort of thing. So in the interview I did the other day with Neo Relic, which you guys are going to hear at some point in the next probably week or two, there was one of the members there basically said, you know, one of the problems with modern prog is that everyone's basically trying to sound like Periphery.
Mm.
And those last three bands, I really felt they were kind of all the same.
Mm.
If you had have just turned the lights off, probably could have guessed which was which, and you probably would have been wrong, you know?
Yeah.
There was no variance. I remember last year we had Voyager and then Leprous.
Mm.
Now, Leprous, not exactly my thing. It was a little bit sleepy, especially when they went on stage at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
But the whole, yeah, I don't know, the three headliners thing, mm. I'm just not sure it worked.
Well, this is the problem, I think. I found the same thing with Be Prog My Friend, RIP, which I don't think we've ever discussed on the show, is that Be Prog My Friend is now no longer.
I don't think we have actually ever said that. I remember you telling me about it, but I don't think we ever said it on the show.
The problem that they had with that festival is that they were obviously trying to balance two completely different worlds. One world being the vintage prog scene and the vintage prog sound with bands like, from the last couple of years, Anathema, Marillion, Jethro Tull, Steve Hackett, Gazpacho, etc. And then on the other side, you've got the modern prog world, which is all of these bands you're talking about. You know, for them, you had A Perfect Circle, you had Devin Townsend, Baroness, you know, Sons of Apollo, you know, Mike Portnoy's Shattered Fortress, you know, Animals as Leaders, all that sort of modern prog sound, which certainly has its roots in the vintage stuff, but sounds totally different. When you're trying to balance those two worlds, then you end up in a problem where you've got the metalheads who are, you know, possibly bored to tears at a gig, and sort of the lighter stuff, and then you've got all the vintage, you know, the sort of the guys who are interested in the vintage prog sound being frightened and scared away by the big genty prog metal guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know how you balance that. You can't, I mean, you could potentially have like a light, you know, the more lighter sort of, you know, the prog, sort of your Anubis and those sorts of guys on one stage and then all the big metal guys on the other stage.
Yeah.
But that would defeat the whole purpose of the thing, because you're trying to introduce, you know, the sort of the constant vibe running through the show was a lot of people checking out a lot of different bands, and if you sort of almost divided the scene down the middle and put all the, you know, the light stuff in one stage and the heavy stuff on the other stage, you wouldn't have that, and you would essentially be running two festivals in parallel with each other.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's sort of one of the issues with that. But I suppose back to the original point, do you think three headliners was too many?
Possibly.
Mm.
I mean, you know, we spoke before that they were running late.
Mm.
And I think, you know, them having to get all their own stuff on stage and, you know, all the bands that were on that stage before the big three headliners were all playing through wedge monitors. Then when those guys hit the stage, that all disappeared and they were playing through in-ears.
That's right, yeah.
You probably know better than I do how much of a fickle bastard those things are to work.
Oh, they can be. I've got to admit, the Opus and the Machine Boys nailed it really well. I actually need to have a chat to them and see what it is they actually use for in-ears, because they were standing...
I thought they were using wedges.
No, they were using in-ears.
Yeah, right.
Wedges were set up, but they all had their in-ears
interesting.
In.
Interesting.
And they were saying things to the sound guy like, yeah, man, I want lead guitar on three, lead guitar on two, my guitar on three, lead vox on one, and backing track on one and a half, something
and
like
no
that.
No drums.
Stuff like that. But seriously, they were...
Because yeah, I think the lead singer who was standing in the middle of the stage, nobody needs drums in the in-ears when you're standing in front of the drums.
Probably not.
No, you can feel that. Well, this stereotypically, like you always see all the way back through to the big band era, why did the singer always stand in front of the drums? So he can hear the damn thing to stay in time.
That's right.
That's the original purpose. And then people started messing with the format and then you end up with, you know, the King Crimson setup where you've got Jacko standing behind the drums and all that sort of thing.
Yep. But is it, I wonder whether or not that's them knowing their gear very, very well and being able to sort of dictate, yes, I want it on this level.
And their own in-ear monitoring engineer, I might add.
Maybe. I don't
know. Well, King Crimson do. That's what I'm saying. King, they've got their own in-ear, they've got their own setup that they cut in, and they, you know, obviously, you know, insanely well rehearsed as well. So.
I know when they changed to in-ear monitors, Petrucci and everyone in Dream Theater were a little bit miffed about it because they couldn't feel anything on stage.
Yes.
So John actually had those two, if you know what they are, there's the very famously from, I think it was the Budokan era, they had those, he had those little things made up so he could put his foot up on top of it and sort of get into the classical guitar stance, what he calls it, the rock stance, but we all know what it's for. it's for world domination mode. But now I believe he's actually got stuff like little speakers or subs or something built into it so he can actually feel stuff on stage.
I'm led to believe.
Obviously the problem with in-ear monitors is you don't get any of that.
I think Mike Portnoy had something fitted to the bottom of his drum stool as well to get that rattle from the bass drum that he was so used to hearing. I think it was something like that. It's some sort of arrangement underneath the drum stool.
Yeah. It doesn't surprise me. But yeah, I mean the three headliners there at Progfest last night were obviously fucking monumental. You had Monuments, Sky Harbor, and The Ocean. Not exactly small bands in their own right.
No, definitely not.
Big bands in their own right. I mean, probably would have been nice to have one of them, maybe two. But to have all three, I think
that the thing is, it was the 10th anniversary thing, so I think
they get a little bit of a pass on it from me, I think.
Sort of, yeah, felt the need to push the boat out to you know, have big, you know, this is the 10th anniversary, so we can get big, big headliners.
Yeah, yeah. So having now seen Progfest, who would you like to see headline it next year?
The Money No Object and ideal world.
Let's say it was a blank check because I asked Chris Marich the same question and he'll be on the show a little bit later with my interview there. But I'm curious to know what your view on this is.
Money No Object, Anderson, Raven, Wakeman.
Oh, yeah.
Money No Object, I'd have those guys in there.
Yeah.
I've no idea how, you know, the blank check would have to be a very bloody big bank blank check, but it'd be great to have those guys in there.
Yeah.
A slightly more realistic ambition, I would love to see Steve Rothery with his band headline.
Yeah, that'd be really cool, actually.
The problem with that, with having those two or a, you know, a really, really big headliner like that, you'd essentially have to hand them the stage for 2 hours. You could not fly them all the way out of here and have them play for 40 minutes. That would just be rude and a hilarious waste of time.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you on that. Interestingly, Chris mentioned in that interview that I did with him, Chris Marich, by the way, listeners, is the guy who organizes Progfest.
Who you should all send thank yous to.
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow him on Instagram and all that. We'll put it all on the old show notes and everything like that. So here's my interview with Chris Marich from Marich Media, the producer and organizer and whole lover of Prog and Progfest. Enjoy. With us on the line at the moment is Chris Marich from Marich Media, the man responsible for Progfest this year. Hello, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. I'm well. How are you?
I'm very well.
Like, I can't take full credit for that. It was a team effort. So Ellie and Tim were very much involved in putting it together. So, yeah, thank you for that. But it's a team effort, but they do it my way.
Well, send our regards to the others who helped with that because it was a phenomenal day. And both myself and Hoggy walked away from that going, yeah, we'll be back next year. That's definitely happening again. But it's been 10 years of Progfest, and you've been involved for the last sort of five or six. How much has it grown?
Well, massively. I mean, I actually can't really remember the first one. I'm not even sure I was on the ground for it. But I wasn't, because it was only in the last couple that it branched out to Sydney. And I think only last year, 2017, that it went to Brisbane for the first time. So there's growth right there. It started out as a, you know, almost the trajectory of a now defunct Australian festival, you know, that started in one city and grew. So it was always a Melbourne thing because obviously, you know, Ellie and Tim are both from there and Nia Blue Vascaris is from there. So it was just a, you know, what started as a small kind of, you know, excuse for getting all of those bands together to a fully fledged national thing. I wouldn't say within a decade because it's been like that for the last three. So, you know, within 7 years or something like that. So the growth is massive. I mean, it's the first time we've had three international headliners as well. Like the previous one, the 2018, we had Leprous from Norway. So to better that with three internationals just within sight of the next one, like the 1 year, that's awesome. And, you know, we've got the attention of Prog Mag in the UK and other international media that are, you know, looking our way. And that was kind of always one of my goals, was to, you know, put it on the map in the same breath as any of the other global prog fests, because it is. And I think we've achieved that.
Mm. And it's you've definitely seen growth across the actual, so far as the interest of the actual festival is concerned. I wonder whether or not you've seen a growth in prog itself. Do you think prog's getting bigger, or do you think it's a case that a lot of other types of music are sort of a bit on the wane, so it looks bigger than what it actually is?
Well, I mean, you know, as much as I'm a massive rock fan, rock is dead in this country. It's very, very hard for a hard rock band to get anywhere. And I definitely think there's an increase in prog, not just in the awareness of it outside of its own little niche, but simply because, you know, bands have broken through that. You know, Nia Blue Vascaris, Caligula's Horse, Circles, all of these bands, like they're kind of like the top tier that have busted that through onto the wider circuit. You know, like they've played regular heavy music festivals, not just contained within their own little genre kind of thing. And that, you know, like the Black Album nearly 30 years ago opened the door for so many bands to follow suit. And I think globally prog is definitely one of the more prominent genres. You know, Devin Townsend's in their Dream Theater just put out a new record. There's so many other, you know, bands that come from there, like, and, you know, you look at the headliners, the Ocean, Monuments, Sky Harbor, they're not really prog in the sort of Rush sense of the word, but they're progressive music. So it's kind of blurred that line as well, and it's gone outside of its original genre to kind of encapsulate more musicality. And I think I was saying to you, you know, offline, you know, it was only a matter of time for this kind of music to swing back around, because we were force-fed guitar sololess bullshit riffs for a decade and a half with like new metal, and you know, there was not really that much creativity going on in there. So I think, you know, and yeah, the rise of the YouTube guitar hero, and you know, people like James Avanier, who are making a living off doing Skype guitar lessons and stuff, and Guitar Hero and games like that, where it's all, oh wow, this is an amazing thing that these guys are doing. Whereas I grew up with guitar solos, and it's like, oh yeah, it's good to do a solo. But to a generation of kids who had never experienced that, they don't know what a Dimebag is or Yngwie Malmsteen or any of those kind of people. This is all new to them, sort of. So I think, you know, it's just swings and roundabouts. You know, that sort of impressive playing has come back. I'll never forget being at a hardcore show, I think, and, you know, all these kids had their fingers in the air, like, doing Twinkle Stars. I'm like, what the fuck is that? And someone's like, oh, they're emulating the guy doing a guitar solo, which was the shittest. So I didn't even register. I was like, oh, that's a solo. I just thought it was, you know, just like a line break or something. Mm-hmm. But it was so devoid from that style of music that these guys were praising him like a god. And it's like, okay, well, step over here and I'll show you some real guitar work. Mm. You know, so definitely prog has reinvigorated musicianship in a fantastic way. Mm.
And I think that's certainly one of the critical things, myself as a muso as well. You know, to see these guys who are being, for want of use of a better term, praised for their ability, rather than for their for the fact that they just wrote a catchy song, like your Ed Sheerans of the world, your Taylor Swifts, etc. It's really heartening to see that, and to see a festival that is honouring that as well, and getting guys like
what we had on the weekend, particularly, you know, the crazy musicians like James, you've already mentioned James Ivani, and, you know, the guys from Anubis, and a lot of really different styles there on the weekend. Do you think prog is just one of those things where it does really encapsulate so many different styles? And do you think that it's one of those genres that is just going to keep growing as this sort of void of musicianless music, dare I call it, sort of starts to falter?
Yeah. I think, you know, I've been watching last night. There's this awesome dude on YouTube called Razor Fist. When I say awesome, he's awesome for some of his stuff, and some of his stuff is outright crazy because he's like just a, you know, gaming celebrity kind of guy. But he does these awesome Metal Mythos retrospective discography walkthroughs from a band, but there's not too many of them. But one of them, you know, I was watching one on Wasp last night, who was massively underrated hard rock band, but just like how they kind of the musical version of Motley Crue in a way, like, yeah, same kind of thing, but with a lot more depth to their songwriting. And I think people have been looking towards that. And it does go, like I was saying before, it does go outside of those boundaries. Like you had, you know, Noodlers, like, you know, James and Anubis. And then you had, massively complicated prog like The Ocean. Then you just had Ball Terrors like Low. Mm-hmm. But it all fits within that umbrella, you know, and it's not a festival that you could put Slipknot on, or a Wasp, or a more, you know, like a hard rock band or anything like that. So it does have its confines, but it's still so diverse and massive within its scope. I think it was you that asked me, you know, like the ideal lineup, and, you know, you could throw, you know, Tool and early Genesis and Peter Gabriel in there and get away with it, you know, like, because it's musical. You know, it's not a wall of death kind of scenario or any of that sort of craziness. It's just like, yeah, there's not much action going on out there in a crowd because everyone's mesmerized. And I said before, you know, the guitar noodlers, but man, you know, this genre produces some outstanding drummers and some motherfuckers on bass who, you know, leave my jaw on open, you know, because it's just amazing what they can do. They're all gun players, not just, you know, it's not just Alcatraz with Malmsteen on a pedestal. Look at him. It's like everyone involved is playing their ass off.
What's next for Progfest? You mentioned some serious growth over the last little while. I have to wonder, and probably a lot of the punters are wondering as well, whether or not Progfest is going to sort of keep evolving to the point where it's sort of like your overseas festivals, where it becomes a stop on an international tour. So you get these bands coming out here and they go, okay, cool, January we're playing Progfest in Australia, and then we're doing, you know, a couple other dates there as well, and then we go over to New Zealand. Is that something that's on the scope for Progfest?
Well, I mean, that's what happened with the headliners, you know, like Monuments started in New Zealand and came this way, and The Ocean started in Perth and went that way, and they went on to New Zealand after the Progfest dates. So that's definitely a little circuit. Whether or not it becomes a must-do stop, we're out of sync with the rest of the world and the festival circuit, so it's hard to predict that. It's not like the European summer where they can literally tour for 4 months and just keep heading east. Mm-hmm. You know, like at the moment it's winter over there, so they're kind of, which also allows for bands to come down here when they're kind of off up there. As far as growth, I haven't spoken to the guys yet because, you know, everyone's just decompressing at the moment. But also, you know, beyond that, don't forget, you know, Ellie, you know, Wild Thing Presents is his label, and there is a record label there with Circles and other artists signed to it. They just signed City of Souls from New Zealand. So there's a lot to go on outside of just the festival. I think the festival is kind of like the showcase of it all, you know, so there's plenty of stuff coming forward out of there, you know, like, and you know, also, yeah, Ellie manages Caligula's Horse, and they've got European runs coming up, so he's gonna be busy with that. So I guess it's, you know, we're not one of those festivals where, you know, the lineup for the following year is announced on, you know, on stage like it is at Wacken or something like that. It's not that far ahead yet. I'd love it to be you know, a 10,000 strong festival, probably is if you add up everybody. But, you know, like a massive thing like that where you could have, you know, spoil for choice for headliners kind of thing like that. Yeah. But, you know, I was saying before, it is growing, but, is there a limit? Is there a maximum capacity? We're definitely not there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, without it branching over into something like Download where it becomes a little bit more general admission, it's only going to get so big. But, yeah, we're a long way from achieving that anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly – I know I was speaking to quite a few people on the day, and just the sheer variety of different prog bands that you had there on the day was – it's really astounding. You had people like Snuff, the band like Snuff, who were doing sort of this crazy Nine Inch Nails stuff. And then obviously your more Baltairy sorts of guys like Monuments and the Ocean toward the end there as well, the very last band that played. Have there been any particularly memorable artists that you've worked with over the course of your years at Progfest that you've sort of clicked your fingers and gone, I want them back again at some point?
Well, I mean, I don't really do the Melbourne and Brisbane runs because I've got enough stuff to do at home. So I don't really get to see, like you said, there's 20 bands on each show, but 10 of them are local to that city. So there's like 10 that travel around. Mm-hmm. So there's 20 bands that, you know, I don't see at all, you know, like the Brisbane and the Melbourne ones who I'd love to have because, you know, there's some that, you know, when I'm writing the press releases and I'm like, oh, I know those guys and, you know, I definitely want to see them. And unless they come up and play elsewhere, I don't get to see them. So obviously, you know, I'm in the Ocean. This is their fifth trip here. And, you know, from the first time it was like, this is definitely a band to watch, you know, like, and look at them, they're, you know, the kings of this sort of stuff. As far as that, you know, I think the very first time I saw Caligula's Horse, which was at the factory floor supporting Voyager a long time ago, to me that blew Voyager off the stage, and I just stood there. They were nobody. I don't even think they were even on Ellie's radar. I don't know how they were on this show. I can't even remember what year it was, but I was looking after Voyager at the time, and this band of noisemakers just blew me away. And you know, you only have to follow their trajectory to show that they've blown more people away. I've seen them play in London when I was, you know, I was over there the last time they were, and I got to see them play in Camden, and that was awesome. You know, it was like, man, you know, it was a small room, but fuck it, they're playing in London, and these are boys that I've seen play the same size room in Sydney years before, and they've done it over here now, and that was only a small room. That was basically a night filler because they were on all of these festivals. They were doing a massive run. So, you know, that's a success story that, you know, isn't one for the mainstream Aussie press because, you know, I don't know, they're not Triple J cool enough. Like, they just, you know, it kind of goes unnoticed a little bit. But I don't think anyone in the prog circles gives a shit about that sort of stuff because they've got their fans, they've got their crowd, we've got the support of those particular media. We don't need, you know, praise from here to be great. But it's not something that we're expecting. Yeah, to a point, you know, some of it is slowly waking up. You know, I think as I keep harassing them, you know, look at this, it's growing exponentially. You know, we've got all of this shit going on now. Yeah. So hopefully, you know, next time those guys come through town, we can get some of those people down to those shows and they can be as blown away as I once was 10 years ago.
Well, look, we'll leave it there because you've very generously given us 15 minutes of your time. Even though you're flat out and you're also trying to decompress after what was an incredible few days.
I think I had a heat stroke on the Monday.
Are you kidding?
No, I was wiped out completely. I just laid there and went, it took me till 4 o'clock to get off the lounge.
Oh, that's terrible. But I think it was from all of us who attended and all the media and all the photographers. You had about 55 photographers there all clambering for a decent shot at the end of the night there.
Well, that was right there. Like, you know, I didn't really have a limit on the guest list, like the photography list, and I probably should have because there was that many of them and I don't want to say no, but that shows how popular this is with so many in all the cities, actually, like in all three and even the sideshows in Adelaide, Perth, you know, endless requests to shoot and to review. So, yeah, that says everything, really.
Well, we hope it just gets bigger and bigger. And obviously Hoggy and myself will be there next year, assuming that we're not well, assuming Hoggy's not jet-setting off somewhere, as he's wont to do, seeing some prog band over in England or something. But we'll be there next year, and hopefully all our listeners will be there as well. So, Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure, absolute pleasure. Thank you.
So thanks, Chris, for lending me your time on what was a very busy day for you and all the media staff and such that were there. I did want to do a little bit of a shout out too to all the media staff that were there, all the photographers and everything like that. Everyone was actually really polite. Sometimes you get to these gigs and these festivals and people are just downright pricks. But there was none of that. So that was actually really, really, really good to see. So thanks to everyone for being super polite with all that stuff. I found it really, really interesting that he was basically talking about Progfest becoming sort of, you know, like something like Rockhamring or Be Prog My Friend or Night of the Prog or what have you, where people go, they're on a tour and they go, oh, cool, so we're going to play Progfest in Australia as well at the same time that we're in this country and that country and da-da-da-da-da-da.
Hopefully they can stitch it up along like with the Asian tours.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be really interesting to get like a, you know, a super big name headliner.
Dream Theater. What?
What? I was going to say Stephen Wilson, but sure, Dream Theater, why not?
I mean, you know, with the tour that they're doing the rest of the year.
I think we know some people who might be able to sort that one out for us.
Well, with the tour that they're doing for the rest of the year, they're in the US and Europe, and I think the European tour takes them through to like September.
Late July, I think.
Late July.
Because they're doing all the European summer festivals. They're playing Download. They're playing some big one in Spain. I think they're playing a festival in Serbia as well. So they're really hitting the European summer festival market.
Yeah. So they've got some seriously massive festivals, you know, as you're saying, Prog in Park here, Masters of Rock, Art
Metal
Media
Day,
Festival,
Metal Days in Slovenia. That's a big one. That's a big one out that part of the world.
You know, Rock the Castle, Tons of Rock, Hellfest, Download. You know, they're not small shows that they're doing.
Definitely not.
And it would be, I would absolutely love to see these guys headline because I reckon it would not be at the Factory Theatre if they did.
No, you'd have to do it somewhere else.
You'd have to do it in another one. And what would actually be really cool, and here's a free idea for you, Chris. if you got a massive headliner like these guys or Tool or, you know,
oh yeah, Tool,
a perfect circle or something like that.
Wouldn't Tool be magic to have
run the main stage at the Enmore Theatre, and run the side stage up the road at Hideaway Bar?
Oh yeah,
which is a tiny little one.
That would almost be like there's a festival that RTRFM do in Perth called the Fremantle Winter Music Festival.
Yep,
and what they essentially do, for those of you who are not aware, they essentially just take over half a dozen bars in sort of southern and eastern Fremantle and have different – now, what they do there is they really do have – this is the rock stage. This is the dance stage. This is the indie guys with their beards and their acoustic guitars. And this is the – these are the metal. And they really do split it up. And so it is entire – and but what you do is you get one wristband and then that allows you to bounce between the different venues. They're all within maybe a couple of – maybe a kilometre of each other.
Beautiful.
So it's definitely possible to bounce, and I have done it, where we bounce from thing to, oh, they're playing over here and these guys are playing over there and all the rest of it, and it's definitely possible to do that. So you can almost run it like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Actually, just on that as well, one thing that was slightly annoying was the fact that there were no pass outs.
Yeah.
What's up with that? I'm assuming that's some sort of license restriction.
Possibly a license restriction, more than likely a way to try and make sure that the food trucks and such were making money instead of people nipping up to the pub up the road.
There was a pub up the road.
There's
okay.
a pub up the road, yeah.
Right, okay.
Then, the park.
Then what they're also trying to do then, of course, is make sure that people stay there and drink their beer rather than go up the road and have potentially cheaper pints up the road.
Probably not.
Okay.
I don't know what a pint was worth because I didn't drink.
Neither did I. $5 for a glass of lemonade was bad enough.
Yeah. I remember last year they had some deals on. It was like $9 for a tinny or something, is all right.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
But, you know, I mean, this is Sydney for you.
Well, it's also festivals.
Yeah, well,
festival alcohol prices are always more expensive anyway.
Yeah,
because that's just how it is.
It's got to the point now in Sydney, though, where festival alcohol prices is around about the same as a pub.
Okay. So, what, because the pubs have come up to the festivals, or the festival has come down to the pub?
No, the former.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so, I mean, you go and you have a pint at... Well, I mean, that brewery is a perfect example that we went to the other night. You know, it's
Wayward.
$13 or $14 for a pint.
Yeah, but that's not your VB and your Tui's, though. That's like independent, artisanally crafted beer.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. And I mean, this is very different. But even if you go to a local and you get a VB or something like that, normally a schooner is about $6.50 for VB or something like that.
I'm assuming this is also in a pub that contains pokies.
In a pub that contains pokies in happy hour.
Oh dear.
Yeah. So.
Oh wait, that's the happy hour price? Oh, Christ almighty. Because there are a couple of places in Perth. I know the Vic in Subiaco were doing it where they were selling pints of beer for $4.50.
Yeah, well, that's what it should be.
Well, this is the thing, though. This is the classic loss-leading marketing technique.
Yeah.
You make no money on the beer and then cane it on the food.
Yeah.
People want to order chips, they want to have peanuts, or they want to have a counter meal. Mm. They make their money on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Typically it's the other way around. You make a cent, you make less money on the food and then flog it on the alcohol.
Yeah, that's
true. They flip that on their head and then do it the other way around.
Yeah. But yeah, so no pass outs. But beyond that, I mean, I thought it was really, I mean, I'll be back next year assuming I'm in the country.
100%. I will definitely be coming back for Progfest next year.
Absolutely. And it would be really nice to see them have a massive international headliner next year.
Well, if he gets his way and turns it into almost, well, I don't think he could have it on the same scale as Soundwave, because we all know how that ended.
Yeah.
In terms of like big multi-city, you know, bring it to Perth and Adelaide sort of thing, I think this is always going to be sort of mired on the East Coast with smaller shows in other places.
Well, yeah, Progfest kind of sits, so far as I can tell, it sort of sits in that mid-high range of prog royalty. So, you know, bands like Leprous, Sky Harbor, you know, they're not Tool, they're not Dream Theater, but they're not exactly, you know, the local guys either. But it gives those local guys a really good opportunity, a good stage to come up. So, like, even next year, I'd love to see Carnival.
Absolutely.
Carnival, Dead Letter Circus. I'll tell you what, if you want to do a triple header again, try and get these guys. Carnival, Dead Letter Circus, and Cog.
Ooh, that'd be a good one.
That'd be a massive lineup.
Yep.
You know, and you'd sell it out. There would be no issues.
You'd sell it out just on Carnival.
I was going to say, you'd sell out on Carnival.
Or Cog, actually. Either one of those two, you'd get a sell out.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest with you, probably Dead Letter Circus as well, or even Butterfly Effect.
Yeah.
Like, I know, I don't know, I heard that they're working on new tunes, Butterfly Effect, so, you know, maybe it could be a triple header next year of, you know, Carnival, the Butterfly Effect, and Cog, and we can all relive the Thamada days.
That'd be nice. That would be lovely. I'd get behind that, absolutely.
You know? Yeah. But no, honestly, amazing day. And you know, just a whole lot of fun.
Do you know who'd be good fun to have actually as a headliner next year, given how well they've flogged it overseas lately? Southern Empire.
Yeah, Empire.
Yeah, we've spoken at length about how, I mean, I think the reason that they weren't available is because they're either in the process of or actually touring in the States.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So same with Pliny as well. Pliny would be amazing to have down there, but again, they're in the middle of a US tour.
Yep.
You know, those guys, I mean, I reckon that crowd would really get off on Southern Empire.
Mm.
Only problem with that is they'd pretty much only be able to play one song.
Well, yeah, I remember last year with Leprous.
Unless you gave them an hour and a half or something.
Last year, Leprous, I think from memory, got an hour. Everyone else got half an hour.
Yeah, the Ocean got an hour, Sky Harbor got an hour, and Monuments got an hour. So that's why I was only able to stay. But they were sort of slightly overlapping with other sets. That's why we sort of nipped
the
around a bit.
With the pushbacks of other ones.
Yeah.
But no, it was a great day, as it was last year as well. I'd really love to see, as I mentioned, I'd love to see Carnival next year do
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Only because I've seen them a few times, and every single time I've seen them, they've absolutely floored me. And I think it'd be – you'd sell it out just on the back of Carnival.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Carnival just did those three shows in Perth and sold all three of them.
And I was going to say, and if you wanted to take it to Perth, have Carnival headline it.
The problem is in if you were going to do a full Progfest show in Perth, there isn't a venue that's got the two stages like that. There just isn't one.
Yeah, you'd probably just have to have a main stage festival.
You would have to do it like have one stage here and one stage somewhere else.
Yeah, and with all the hullabaloo that's going on at the moment with some of the venues.
We're not going there.
We're
not going to go there.
But you can all look that one up on your own. It might be really difficult to do that.
I tell a lie. You could do that if you had... just to drop it right in the middle of that mess, you could do the main stage and amplifier and have the smaller one around the back at Capitol.
Yeah.
That would be the place to... That would be the only place you could do it in Perth to do something like that. Mm. And then you would just have a stream of people going backwards and forwards because it's just like out and around the alleyway to the to the Capitol at the back.
That's the same as the Metro
Sorry, Capitol at the front, amplifier at the back.
Yeah, it's the same as the Metro here.
Mm. So if you wanted to do that, you could do that there. However... Capitol is significantly smaller than the upstage stair is the stage upstairs at the factory there.
But that's a big room. That's 1,000 or something like that.
That is a big room. The Capitol room is probably half that.
Yeah.
Half that size. And the stage isn't that big. And the stage is definitely not that big either.
Right. Okay.
So that's the problem. To try and restage a show like what we saw last night in Sydney in Perth, we haven't got a venue big enough for that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which is annoying. And this is what I've been saying about the scene in Perth, is that there are plenty of smaller places to play and plenty of sort of lower mid-tier kind of places to play. But then there's the big arenas, but there's nothing in the middle. There's no sort of theatre type places aside from actual sit down classical theatres like the Perth Concert Hall or the Astor Theatre or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. But that just about wraps it up, I think, for this episode. Going forward, we're going to be releasing some interviews that both Hoggy and I have done with numerous people. So the likes of Numinia, Hashashin. Who else did we speak to?
You spoke to Seams, didn't you?
Yeah, the guys from Seams. We managed to have a chat with the guys from Snuff as well. Quite a few there.
The other one I was wanting to, we did speak to Hashashin and Lachlan Dale, who runs Artist Catharsis and World Within Worlds.
Yep.
That's a whole other show that I want to hopefully have a chat with him about and all the stuff that he's doing.
Absolutely. And I think that's really key as well, is to have a good chat with the guys who about other stuff but do a single episode on that. That's what we're going to do. Hoggy will actually bring you that episode. It's because it's probably going to be around about April. When I am not going to be in Sydney, fingers crossed.
So if the shorter interviews that we have done have left you wanting for more, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to another podcast called Australian Hunger. The guy there, Benjamin, his show is more geared towards the heavy styles of music, and his podcast is a full-on interview show. He does full interviews with – so he has – this week released a 2-hour-long episode with Seams. He did another one that was 1.5 hours long with Opus of a Machine. So I'll put a link in the show notes to his podcast. And if the smaller interviews that we're doing and have left you wanting for more, go and listen to Australian Hunger. Very, very good show.
Absolutely. Yeah. But that's about all we have time for this fortnight. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. As always, thanks to everyone who came up and said hello at Progfest, and thanks to everyone who actually went to make it an absolutely killer day. My name is David Ellis
and my name is Alex Hogg, and we shall see you all next time.
See you then.
See ya.